still with pieces calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or the Catholic Church. Today, I have invited Brother Kieran Fenn to a Zoom recording for a broadcast. Brother Kieran, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Kia ora, may are they?
Brother Kieran Fenn is a Champagne brother and Bible scholar, originally from Gisborne, and has spent many years in adult education, teaching scripture in New Zealand and abroad. And since the foundation of Titiponamo Study and Joy, he has offered a lot of his knowledge for our people who come and take part in our sessions on the Bible, on Mary, on saints, on the evangelists, on the gospels. And now our next session will be on Mary again, because we are in the month of Mary, we are in the month of May. And so we are going to have a session on the 20th of May about Mary, our inspiration. Brother Kieran, we're talking about Mary in the third millennium. Isn't this a sensitive topic?
Well, yes, but it's not a matter of gazing into a crystal ball and trying to read the future, because the direction of Mary for the third millennium is already well in place. What happened in the past influences the present and shapes the future. And we've already looked at several topics that are part of this question on this web when we looked at the battle for a renewed Mariology at Vatican II. We've looked at the changing face of Mary through history, including the Reformation. We've looked at the Mary of the Scriptures, and we've looked at the Marian dogmas. So now, veneration of the Blessed Mother is a central characteristic of Catholic tradition, and it remains so. You know, it's never easy to live in a time of great change. We only have to look at Jesus himself. And, of course, people, when something new comes, they tend to say, well, were we wrong in the past? But if you look at Jesus' own experience, what he proclaimed was the dream of God for humanity that we call the reign of God, and also that God was not just a rule maker and someone to be appeased, but a loving parent, the Abba, the father of Jesus. And why? He was opposed by the most religious groups in his society, the priestly Sadducees and the pious Pharisees. Why did they oppose him? Because they were so sure that they were right. Jesus never bluntly told them that they were wrong. But what he did, he called them to consider the possibility that there may well be other ways of seeing things, and those ways might lead to better living and growing in the love of God. Now, that applied to Jesus, but also applies to Mary. And that's why this is such an important topic.
And Brother Kieran, isn't that also what Pope Francis does? He never says you're wrong or you're right. He always talks in parables, or he gives examples.
Precisely. There are new ways of looking at things that might be more creative, more fertile, more productive for humanity. And that creativity is the critical issue, because creativity has to do for our age what our ancestors did for their age, developing an appealing view of Mary suited to our culture.
That's really a good point. But what does it mean for Mary to have an appealing view?
Well, I like what Oscar Romero said, that faith which is lived in isolation from life is not faith. And we could say that that's true for Mary too, that a Mary that's isolated from life is not a Mary for today. And, you know, by the middle of last century, the mother of Jesus was frozen in time, trapped in images created by Renaissance painters with all their beauty, placed on a pedestal and elevated beyond our reach. Now, every age creates its own picture of Mary. And now, for the 21st century, there is a new appreciation of Mary, one that is faithful to the teaching of Vatican II, yet at the same time is respectful of the varied and rich traditions that we've inherited. Mary, a woman of courage and strength, should have a central place in our spirituality, but we have to develop a new language to describe Mary, a theology of Mary that's suitable for today. Now, Vatican II, document on Lumen Gentium, number 54, Mary is very like us. Well, we could lament that we've lost the woman behind the devotion. We praise the miracles, we forget her person. But Mary is very like us, fully a member of God's people and on our side. Mary lives as one of us, first among the faithful, but one of us.
Brother Kieran, you are a Marist brother. So the Marist spirituality, isn't it about bringing Mary into our lives rather than having her on a pedestal?
Oh, I've always loved the line that someone once said to me that, you know, there's something different about a religious order of men that have the spirituality of a woman. You're right, yes. I would say half my identity is the Marist, the other half is being brother. But you're right that it is a way of life. But see, that's Ramiro's line, isn't it? That faith that is removed from life is not faith. You can have a great box of what you believe and so on, but is it affecting your life? So that's really so important. Yes, so Mary is... her life was a genuine human journey. To deny that is to take her out of the ranks of humanity, and it's unfair to her and unfair to all of us. Pope John the 23rd may have a beautiful line when he said, the Madonna is not happy when she's placed before her son. And sometimes spirituality did that. So yes, her life was one with our life. And that's why I think we need to really look at this question of her life.
So what was the reality of her life?
Well, she was a Jewish woman of her day. She observed the Sabbath and the practices associated with the special sort of fervor of the Anoim. Those were the people who were reliant on God, the poor of the land. Her life, well, the commonplace life. It was an obscure life. Here was a woman who searched. She felt anxious. She laughed and cried. She didn't understand everything. And oh my goodness, when you think of the consequences of her yes to the Annunciation, think that one through. She had to find her way from one stage to another as she traveled life's journey. And life did not treat her gently. I love the question somebody once, or the comment someone once made that, you know, Mary probably said many times, why is this happening to me? And I can imagine it. Life didn't treat her gently. She lived through the human lot that falls all of us. Tears, distress, courage, greatness, agony, and finally death. She was probably illiterate, unable to read like the vast majority of the men and women of her day. They were an oral culture. They learned by hearing. So, yes, we face a lot as we look at this, the reality of her life. And Elizabeth Schussler-Fiorenza said, look, at the center of the Christian story stands not the lovely white lady of artistic and popular imagination kneeling in adoration before her son. Rather, it is the pregnant young woman living in occupied territory and struggling against victimization and for survival and dignity. That's rough, but it's reality. So the reality, what was her life like? For a Palestinian woman in the first century, life in a hill country village such as Nazareth depended on agriculture. Mary would have spent between 4 and 5 hours a day working with others in the fields around the village, planting, weeding, harvesting. Near her home was a small family plot of vegetables and fruit trees, work that fitted in with caring for children. Not only her own child, but those of the wider family with whom they lived under the same roof. If we understand what life was like and buildings were like under one roof, honest to goodness, you could appreciate the fact of living cheek by jowl in a small village of perhaps 400 people.
But so, yes. Brother Kieran, it reminds me of when I prepared my presentation on the nativity scene. I read that one author, he wrote that it was very likely that Mary and Joseph were accommodated in with their family already, but as she was heavily pregnant, they wanted to give her some privacy, and the only place that was available was where the animals were, but that was the only private place. Otherwise, they would all have shared one room.
Yes, housing is a critical issue. Side by side, sharing facilities, sharing the communal oven, and even eating together. It's the reality of the life. So, yes, well, living under one roof, the relatives, of course, the story of going to Jerusalem when the child gets lost, they think he's with his relatives. Yes, they're from the village. So, yes, add to this the cooking of meals, processing grain for bread, storing food for the winter months, grains, olives, fruit, and herbs. Look, the face of the Mary of history is a very human one. And perhaps it's easier to relate to her as one who shares our life and work than as a distant, semi-divine being so different from us. Look, I remember so vividly the school in Manila giving a talk on Mary, and there was a woman there whose work was cleaning the windows, and there were a lot of windows. And at the end, after I had presented some of this material, she said, "Brother, I've always thought of Mary as the lovely lady dressed in blue with lily-white hands. Now I feel she was just like me, and I feel so much closer to her." And I thought to myself, "Oh, and I bet you she feels closer to you." But that's the so when you look at the reality. I love Teresa of Lisieux. You had this wonderful line. "For a sermon on the Blessed Virgin to please me," I'll tell you what, it's great to have a little flower on your side. "For a sermon on the Blessed Virgin to please me, I must see her real life. They," the homilists and the authors, "they show her to us as unapproachable, but they should present her as imitable, bringing out her virtues, saying that she lived by faith just like ourselves, and give proof of this from the Gospels." Look, Mary was a daughter of this earth. She had human passions and joys. She shared all of the human concerns that we experience. And as an individual, she made difficult choices in life with courage, and grew in time to be this wise elder at the community, the budding community of the church. She is indeed our sister in faith, as well as the Blessed Mother that we honor.
Isn't she also the first apostle?
Well, that's an interesting one, because an apostle is one who is sent. Well, boy, she was sent into this world to bring Jesus into it. So I would say, if you're going to go to the earliest, yes, right. We'll give her that. Queen of the Apostles, I think that fits into the litany. And when we come to things like that, litanies, I love the rosary. And the document that is critical for the Mary of the 23rd, of the third millennium, is Marialis Cultus, Pope Paul VI's document. And he did say in it, feel free with regard to devotions. But those devotions should bring us a Mary who is one of us, a Mary we can relate to. So, yes, that document is a critical one. And really, what it does is it says that, look, devotion to Mary, it's got five characteristics. And I think this is really the important thing. The five features of a sound Marian spirituality, it has to be biblical. We'd agree on that, based on the testimony of the scriptures. You can see the yes of the Annunciation, the service that comes out of the Visitation, the obedience of doing whatever he tells you, following the first disciple of Luke's gospel. It has to be, the second characteristic is liturgical, in tune with the great liturgical seasons. In Advent, we wait with Mary for the birth of the Messiah. Pentecost, the coming of the Spirit into the church. Mary was a great Spirit bearer, and her association with the Spirit is so important. It's got to be ecumenical, in harmony with the agreements reached with our fellow Christians. That's why new dogmas, no, I'm not into those. I'm interested in making the dogmas we have speak to our day. So ecumenical. So Mary unites rather than divides Christians. Now, the interesting one is the anthropological one. Be aware of the changing role of women in society. That is fundamental for the church, because quite frankly, when the church, this masculine church we live in, when it, and we call it Mother Church, when this church finds the women in the church, it will find the woman of the church. I'll say that again, because that's original, an original line from me, right? When the church finds the women in the church, it will find the woman of the church, Mary. Yeah. You know, art, because we mentioned, you know, art, the artists have got a lot to answer for, but they've contributed a lot. When we were looking at the Sistine Chapel and Eve, the creation of Eve.
Yes.
That wonderful link, God holding the hand of Eve and Eve reaching out to Adam. And the point that Nicholas made was the linking between God and the male Adam was Eve. And I think that the life-giving presence of women in the church, Pope Francis is doing that now.
Yeah.
Women entering, being placed in the curia and in positions in Roman leadership.
But it's also just to take the women seriously and yes. Not as only they, like they said, the God-bearer of Mary. But she was not just the God-bearer. She was not just Theotokos. She was a lot more.
Oh, yes, a lot more. But let's remember, it came from below us. I like the Father Ezio Blasoni, when he wrote up on the board, God, Christ, Mary, Church, World. He drew a line under God, Christ, Mary, and said that's where things were. Mary was up there with God and Christ. Then he said Vatican II shifted the line. God, Christ, line, Mary, Church, World. Because by placing Mary in the document on the church, that great source of controversy that almost split Vatican II, out of 3,000 bishops, the vote to place Mary within the church in that chapter 8 went by only 40 votes.
Can you say that again? What was the crucial point why it almost split?
The crucial point was whether Mary should have her own document and even new dogmas, right? But Vatican II was about the church in the world, its liturgy and so on. And it was a cultural thing as well. You can see the different countries and the different cultures that went one way or the other. And out of the vote going by only 40 was met with a stunned silence. How could the Mother of God become such a source of controversy among the leaders of the church? It was a seismic shift that took place. And all right, people start to say that the decline in devotion to Mary, blame it on Vatican II, but no, that's not what's going on at all. And Paul VI wrote that great document, Marialis Cultus. And these are the points that are being made. Anthropological, that's the one we've been looking at. The changing role of women in society. And we cannot expect women or Mary to appreciate, a woman or men to appreciate a Mary who's presented as passive and subservient. She chose, and it was a tough choice. And the consequences, well, we have to thank her for what she did. But now, the fifth of those points that were made in that document, and let me say also that Pope John Paul II in Redemptoris Mater, he followed up to mark this document. 1975 or 74 was when Marialis Cultus was written. Mm-hmm. And they do say it takes 50 years for something to influence, to sort of change in the church and for some influential thing to be realized. And that document, Marialis Cultus, it's so important for Mariology. And these five characteristics. The fifth one is theology and doctrine. God and Christ are at the center. Any truth about Mary is first of all a truth about Christ. And Mary is to be placed in relation to Christ and to the church. So quickly, five critical points: biblical, liturgical, ecumenical, anthropological, and theological and doctrinally sound.
Mm-hmm. And wasn't also Rana who mentioned something about the image of Mary that enabled the church in past centuries to prevent society from a purely matriarchal domination?
Oh, well, yes, Rana actually was echoing what that wonderful line from the Little Flower, St. Therese. We must focus Mary first, not as a heavenly being, but as a human person. Same thing. An active suffering for herself and others, learning from the midst of many uncertainties, accepting her function in salvation's history and faith, hope, and love. And that way, she became model and mother of believers. So, yes, he adds that the church had to learn slowly and painfully amid the changes in secular society to give woman what is her due by nature and by right, an historical process which is still far from complete. But in its understanding of faith, the church has a starting point of its own for this process. And what is its own is, in fact, present as an archetype in its image of Mary. You say Mary is model of the church. What is the church to be? A mother who listens to all her children.
And isn't it also the church, isn't it a term for describing the people of the church? Because we have the church with a capital C and a small C. So if we see the church as the people and Mary is connected to us.
Yes, well, the description that von Balthasar, who was a favorite theologian of Pope John Paul II, he complained about the imbalance of the male and the female principles in the church. So that he said the church has become, to a large extent, it's lost its mystical characteristic. It has become a church of permanent conversations, organizations, advisory commissions, congresses, synods, structures, and restructuring statistics. That is to say, more than ever, a male church, if perhaps one should not say a sexless entity. And again, in his fear that Christianity threatens imperceptibly to become inhuman, we're really at a crisis point, let's face it. Von Balthasar added, in this masculine world, all that we have is one ideology replacing another. Everything becomes polemical, critical, bitter, humorless, and ultimately boring. And people in their masses run away from such a church. Now, he said that in 1975.
Oh, it's almost,
I would say that's rather prophetic, isn't it? Yes, prophetic.
It's almost 50 years.
Yes, I know. And mothers welcome you. Mothers take you in their arms. What's going to happen after this whole thing of the COVID crisis? Are we going to get welcomed back? Are we going to have a clergy that can actually say, we have to mother people back into the church?
I think that's a good question as we are heading towards Mother's Day on Sunday.
I know. I think this is very timely, this one.
And we are, in the month of Mary. And I think it's ever since the 13th century that there's a special, that it was dedicated to Mary. But of course, in the Northern Hemisphere, it's also the time of planting of the first growth of green. And it's the spring, summer is coming. It's quite a different atmosphere to New Zealand. But we still have the month of Mary, and there are Mary devotions to Mary. And as you say, also you'll say in the presentation that is coming up, Mary can be our inspiration. So on the Friday, the 20th, we are going to have a session on Mary, our inspiration. And that's from 7 to 8:30. And then we have another session in June, which is a series of three parts from the 13th to the 27th of June, three Monday evenings on St. Paul, because he was also an inspiration and he was very, very, very active, wasn't he? The first missionary. Oh, yeah.
Right. And Paul, I think, would agree very much that a Mary that is isolated from life is not a Mary for today. Well, Paul created this theology out of life, our Mariology. Mary is one who is with us, like us, in us, and for us.
Thank you so much, Brother Kieran. And thank you for this interview. So I wish everybody a wonderful weekend and a good Mother's Day. And just remember that there are many mothers out there. They can be male, they can be old, they can be young. It's about being a mother to others. And I think that's the important thing. Thank you very much, Brother Kieran.
Thank you.
Out there, old peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world a new day dawn.
जय साईराम श्रोताजन।